Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. We all know the big five banks, the big brand names, gazillions spent on marketing, a gazillion branches, gazillions more in profit. But there is one bank most of us haven't really heard that much about. It focuses on helping Indigenous individuals, Indigenous communities access financial services, and it is called the First Nations Bank of Canada. CEO Keith Martell joins us now to talk about the bank, the services, and how it differs from the other banks out there across this country. He joins us on Yellow Quill First Nation land within the city of Saskatoon. Hello there.
How are you?
I am well. You have been with First Nations Bank of Canada for a very, very long time. Tell us how it's different from the Big Five.
Right. So our, as you mentioned in the intro, our primary focus is serving Indigenous communities across the country. We were started by Indigenous groups, First Nations in Saskatchewan, who were really starting to participate a lot more in the economy and just found that the big banks that you mentioned really weren't representing their interests. And as they began to grow, they felt there was a need for a chartered bank that focused on understanding the needs, the priorities, and the wants, and frankly, that drove those profits from banking back into the communities that they served.
You're 80% owned by Indigenous shareholders. Tell us who that is. Are those particular communities, or where does that capital come from?
Yeah, it's actually up to 87% now, and we're pretty broadly owned. We don't have any individual shareholder that owns more than 19%, and we have about eight larger shareholders who are in the high teens. Or teens, low teens. They're primarily First Nations groups, Inuit groups across the country. It's there's a couple individual First Nations, and then a few regional groups like the James Bay Cree in Northern Quebec. Actually, our largest shareholder just came on in the last quarter, and it's the Irminskin Cree Nation from Alberta. So, you know, we've got a good collection of First Nations communities. They're all progressive. They've got a lot of economic activity, and they feel banking is a good addition to that portfolio.
Why a bank model and not a credit union model?
Right.
The distinction being that, hey, you're like driving for your shareholders versus a credit union model, which is driving for your members.
Yeah, I know I'm probably going to tick off both the corporate banks and the credit unions by saying this.
I give you the platform to do that.
Yeah, exactly. We're like a corporate credit union, really. Our collective of First Nations that bank with us, you know, it's not volume driven and, you know, member sort of returns, but in a lot of ways, you know, they own our bank because of the services we deliver to the region. And the more services we deliver to the region, the more profit we make, and the more profit we make, the more we return back to their communities. So in a lot of ways, we are like a corporate credit union. Mm. When we started the bank in 1996, we wanted to serve Indigenous people nationally. And at that time, the only model that would have given us a national license and footprint was a chartered bank.
Right.
And so we approached a number of chartered banks and said, we want you to help us with capital management systems. And over time, we want you to leave us alone and be your competitor. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of banks that were interested in that, but TD Bank did step up. And I got to give them a lot of credit. They did help us get started. They were our big brother for a long time. They're still about a 13% shareholder. We do lots of business with them still, but we do business with lots of other financial institutions as well. So, you know, that was why we went the bank model. It gave us the ability to serve Indigenous communities from coast to coast to coast.
You are from an Indigenous community in Northern Saskatchewan, I understand.
Right.
Tell me about what, for a non-Indigenous person like myself, what some of the differences are in terms of history, in terms of service needs, in terms of culture, that First Nations Bank would have a real keen eye on focusing on.
Right. A lot of people focus on the differences because of Indian Act or cultural differences in how business is approached. And those are differentiators. But I'd say the biggest differentiator is the current socioeconomic situation that a lot of Indigenous communities find themselves in. You know, like most colonized parts of the world. Indigenous people are at the center of the economy when settlers first start arriving. You know, First Nations people were the back of the fur trade and settlement and, you know, breaking land and exploring across the country. But when they became when they got in the way of more settlement, they sort of fell off the economy wagon, and they spent, you know, decades, almost a century, really just struggling to survive. And so, you know, a lot of them started to regain their independence and capacity, not until really the mid-50s, 60s, and those were mostly soldiers, veterans, Indigenous veterans who were coming back from war and came back to find out that the Indian agent controlled every part of their life. So as they started to get control of their economy, you know, the law didn't allow First Nations people to hire a lawyer till 1951. Mm. First Nations people didn't get the vote in Canada till 1960. Most Canadians don't realize that. Mm. So their socioeconomic situation is such that, you know, as they start to get control of these things, you know, there's people in communities that still don't own their own home because most homes are still, you know, community owned social housing. And so all of those economic activity that we take for granted as most Canadians, a lot of First Nations, Inuit, Métis communities are still just struggling to get back into the economy. So I think that's the main difference that we understand and we focus on. We do a lot of commercial lending to Indigenous-owned businesses, and they don't fail because we structure the debt in a way that ensures they're going to succeed.
How do you think about personal lending? And I ask because, you know, if we're talking about, you know, Iqaluit in the far north, the Nunavut, people don't have jobs in the way they would in the south. Not that they aren't contributing to the economy. It's just they don't work at the Starbucks. They're not a teacher at a local school necessarily. It's a very different framework. And so they might not have established something like a credit score, which is what the big banks would use to, to write out a line of credit or a installment loan. Have you needed to think about those principles and those criteria differently?
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head. You know, a person in Iqaluit, where we happen to actually have a community banking center, you know, they probably don't have a credit score because you're right. They probably haven't engaged in a lot of the, you know, credit card bank activity. A lot of people prior to us being there may not even have ever had a bank account. We've gone to a lot of northern communities where, you know, less than 30% of the employed people had a bank account simply because to get a bank account, you would have had to incur, you know, hundreds of dollars of an airline ticket to fly to a neighboring community that had a bank just to set up a bank account. So, you know, we've had to think about that stuff differently. We do things like establish credit scores, you know, small community-backed loans that are repaid, establish a credit rating, and then just working on knowing the people. You know, we have 70% of our staff are Indigenous, primarily from the communities they serve. So they know who the people are in the community. They know who's got the character to repay the debt and who doesn't. And so that really helps with us providing personal services in light that we don't have the kind of information that, you know, you'd have on somebody in downtown Toronto.
It's a real throwback. It feels like a throwback to the, you know, the 1920s where you'd actually know your bank manager.
That is
completely unfathomable today because, well, we don't even go into the branch. I want to ask you to look ahead to the future, 5 years, 10 years. What are some of the really big ideas that you're excited about for your bank?
Well, there's so much. And, you know, what's happened in the last 25 years, in my view, has been remarkable. And I think there's even more to come. So, you know, a few things are really helping. Advancement of education. You know, in 1960 in Canada, there was 60 status Indians in post-secondary education in the entire country. You know, today we've got, at any given time, 35,000, you know, those would be First Nations young people in post-secondary education. As that education flows through the economy, you know, our communities are, you know, serving themselves and they're serving others now. We've got some First Nations that provide more teachers to the neighboring non-Indigenous town than they do to their own communities. And so that involvement in the economy, that engagement, the renewed land rights that Indigenous people have, you know, there's vast territories of this country that are either owned or significantly influenced by First Nations, Inuit, Métis groups. And, you know, if Canada wants to continue to develop those regions, work on developing resources, water rights, all those issues are continuing to really be resolved with Indigenous involvement. And for me, that's really the change mechanism we need to put Indigenous people back at the center of the economy.
I think it's fair to say that non-Indigenous people have been, at best, completely oblivious to our country's history and the dynamics that Indigenous folks face in the communities in which they live. If there was one call to action that you would offer up to our non-Indigenous listeners out there as it relates to banking and financial literacy for Indigenous communities, given that we all have a vested interest in their success and your success, what would it be?
Right. So I'm going to take liberty and I'm going to put two calls to action. So,
love it.
The first one is, I would say, educate yourself, like find out what the reality is and the history of Indigenous people. It's the history of our country. Mm-hmm. Canadians should know what the history of Indigenous people is, because Indigenous people are the history of this country. Mm-hmm. There's a fascinating history. There's fascinating stories of the people who were here before. I talked to a university professor one time who was writing a book on Western Canada, and her book started in 1905. And she says, well, there was nothing here before that. and I was like, my people were here before that. There was people here before that, you know, and I think so. Canadians, I think, should spend some time just understanding the history of Indigenous people, you know, the sad history, but the good history as well. Yeah. You know, understand what residential schools did to communities. You know, it was a tragedy. So first of all, understand. And second of all, I think I always challenge people to advocate. Like, don't, when you're on the, you know, when you're a non-Indigenous person or a new immigrant, you're standing on the soccer field with your fellow parents and somebody starts talking about an Indian kid on the other team, step up. You know, we can't let those prejudices and those biases and those misinformations, frankly, continue to be the base upon which we think Indigenous people are.
I am so glad we had this conversation, Keith.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for the time.
Keith Martell is the Chief Executive Officer of the First Nations Bank of Canada. He joined us from Yellow Quill First Nation land within the city of Saskatoon.